Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are getting an update from Silvercrest Metals, traded on the TSX under the symbol SIL and on the NYSE under the symbol SILV. We are chatting with Chris Ritchie, the president of Silvercrest Metals. And Chris, we're following up on a news release that came out just yesterday, October 26th. The title says, Silvercrest Las Chispas project construction remains on schedule and budget. Now, some of the highlights that I saw here is that at the end of Q3, about 54% of the construction was completed. This is ahead of schedule that was scheduled for around 48%. Budget remains very much on track. Underground development is actually even more ahead of schedule here. We'll get into these different components, and I will also post the news release link below this interview as it does walk through all of the individual components so you all can read over that. But Chris, give us your just high-level overview here of just how well construction is moving forward here at the Las Chispas project, please.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, first of all, we're going to knock on wood and give full credit to the operations team managing all that's going on during COVID and whatnot. So it's a big testament to a lot of the risk mitigating protocols we put in early on. Again, one being the confined camp, having a fixed price contract for the mill build, which is, again, only a component of the overall construction. So you're, protected against big parts of that inflation and logistical challenges that fall on Ausenco. So those are really big things. But for us, yeah, everything's humming along really, really nicely. And I think the main thing is this is a very modest sized facility. And it's not modest in terms of the amount of silver and gold we have. But it's a pretty small project. And again, Pierre's previous project was probably about 40, 50 times bigger than this. So in terms of complexity, there's a lot fewer moving parts. So again, that really helps significantly as well. So I think some of the main things to be chatting about is by the end of this upcoming year, and a few months from now, the schedule calls for us to be about 80% complete. And in the news release, people will note that, we have about $60 million left to spend. At the end of the year, that's going to trickle lower. But on the balance sheet, you'll see that we have approximately about $200 million US of cash, as well as some available debt. We will pull another $30 million of debt at the end of this year. That's solely because it allows us to keep the other $30 million available to us. So it's just nice to have that working capital. It's not that expensive for us. So the big part of what kind of vehicle we are is we want to manage risk. We know that we still have a lot of growth in front of us. We did not want to come to the finish line, maybe make a few mistakes, and then lose the credibility with our investors, and then some other company kind of swoops along and comes in right at the finish line. So we wanted to exit construction with strength. And I think a big thing today is people finally got to sort of get some degree of confidence in how the remaining spend looks relative to the balance sheet. And that also ties into where we are in the market. I'm sure all your listeners know of the Lassonde curve, which is, it's really fun and sexy when you're drilling and finding ounces. And then as soon as you get to the construction phase that, now you're in risk. Now you've got to execute. And we had a lot of people say, I don't want to be around for that phase. So we've underperformed the market by a little bit this year. The whole market's been quite down. So it's kind of fortunate that we went through that phase during a bad tape. But we're in a situation where prior to the last couple of days, the share price was such that we traded over 2 times the market cap of the stock at higher levels. So again, my point there is that people have had the chance to sell, the people who made a lot of money could profit take, but now we're in a situation where the risk is coming down. The end of construction is within sight. The conversion from higher risk to free cash flow is, again, within sight. And the balance sheet's looking quite strong. So the risk reward is what I think the market was reacting to today. So I think there's a big shift in risk reward that's going on. And there's hopefully a bit of a fight for just the stock itself. I mean, we're about $1.2 billion US market cap. And there's just not that much stock out there in the grand scheme of things. So as you start to see all the sellers that made money and were high-fiving us last year and the years before, we can go back to those people and we can have conversations now talking about, you know, the growth that we might have from the drilling in 2021, 2022, you know, in 2023, all on a share count that would, that we don't think should be changing.
Well, Chris, just to that point, you've mentioned many times that you guys have that defensive nature because you have the ounces in the ground, you've got your construction on track, you've got the extra money and padding to make it through any startup hiccups or any rough spatches that happen to the sector in the meantime. But you also just mentioned that there's a lot of people that had exited the stock during the orphan phase of the Lassonde curve, where you know, what they consider the quote-unquote boring phase, the permitting and construction. However, there's also a lot of funds and larger institutional investors that'll probably be waiting until you go into production and will be interested there. So while there may be some retail component that exits at that phase, there's that whole other institutional component that'll come in. Maybe you could speak to that and how you think that is going to affect your stock trading, kind of like what we saw today in the market.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's been, you know, in the industry in the last few years, the passive managers like the ETFs and whatnot that are lower fees, they're now larger than active managers. So a lot of people are getting a lot more sensitive to the amount of money they're spending on their investment transactions. And what that means for the bigger investors, if their fees are, you know, at risk or their fees are coming down, they need to raise more money to keep the top line flat for their business models. So the whole market has been gravitating towards larger companies, more liquidity, less risk. So for us, there's a whole new wave of investors that require cash flow, and we're not there yet. So, I mean, Q2 is when we hope to be starting the commissioning of the mill, and those investors need larger chunks of money. So for us, again, when we talk about the supply and demand of the stock itself, we want to clean that up quite nicely ahead of that. So if and when that bigger audience is now eligible to consider us in their portfolios, we want to make sure that the share register is quite tight at that moment. There's a second consideration in terms of how we would be eligible or not for some of these big funds, and that's some of the ESG. And that stands, again, for the environment, social, and governance. There's a huge movement of people, as people know today, that they want to make sure their money is going towards companies doing good things. So you need to have certain ESG scores. You need to have liquidity. You need to have cash flow. All things we're going to have in the back half of 2022. And for us on the ESG, just quickly, is, you know, we're doing work on climate change data. We're doing work on our water stewardship program in the community. All things we'll be able to disclose, because again, there's, you can be doing great work, but if you don't disclose it, you don't get the scores. So again, all things that we're very aware of to understand and help communicate that hopefully there's a lot more buyers waiting for us as we exit this orphan phase.
Now let's quickly talk about some of that stock trading, because it's interesting to see that we're seeing some of the lowest volume in 2 years within this stock. Yes, the stock was trending lower with the whole sector, but has bounced nicely this month. What does it say to you, Chris, that we are seeing generally lower volume in the stock?
Yeah, so this is the Q4 to date is the lowest volume we've had in the last 7 quarters. It's about $7 million a day. And again, last year, there was chunks of time we were at over $20 million. So it gives you a sense that the selling is done in a certain sense. You're just not seeing the same people just pressuring the stock. There's fewer people down here that are in a rush to sell at these levels. You're also getting a sense from the momentum that the material space, the gold space, is the worst sector in terms of momentum for every single month of 2021 other than January. So to me, these are just signs that you're near lows. I mean, you're also at a standpoint where the industry is trading at a 23% discount to 10-year average valuation multiples for the space. So there's just not many more people down here that I think want to let go of their stock. So We're sort of in the middle of tax loss selling season, and that usually kind of winds down in mid-December. But hopefully that means there's a nice little shift in momentum here, especially as we execute and continue to reduce risk, that might, you know, help move things higher. So there's two things that move volume or sort of average daily volume. One's the number of shares that traded, and one's the share price. So when you get moves like today, when you see about 1.2 million shares trading, you know, times about, you know, $8 million US. But if you do the math on the dollars trading hands, but you compare that to the impact of the market cap, you've got about six, seven, eight times the impact per dollar that's traded. So that gives you a good sense that there's not that much more trading left. If you're seeing that same volume occur at the same share price, then there's an equal number of sellers to the equal number of buyers. So these are things that we track closely, because part of what we're trying to do is really just tighten up the stock itself. You know, we actually got some of our shareholder data. We have 29,000 investors that own less than $25,000 per person. Those people are fantastic. And if we even had one third of that in dollar value come in, we would be, you know, that's about 20-25% of our market cap. And I just don't think our market cap could take that sort of demand without moving the price significantly. So it's a really good sign down here to see all this sort of washout, and then today to see a nice news release like this, you know, be able to sort of make this much of an impact on the share price.
So, Chris, I do want to dive a little bit more into the company in terms of the operations, because when this project is in production, there are some nice cash flow numbers here. You lay it out within that news release, but it looks like free cash flow estimated in 2023 is going to be $160 million and then $110 million from the years following that up to 2029. And that is all, it seems like, fully funded right now. But you mentioned that you're pulling $30 million in debt to have that $30 million in cash still available for other corporate things. What would some of those corporate things be that would further add value to this company?
Yeah, I'll clarify your point there on the cash flow. So yes, in 2023 is our first full year. We are anticipated to have $160 million of project level free cash flow. And the way that works is it wouldn't include your G&A, you know, some of your debt servicing and exploration. So, you know, you can assume what those look like. But though that $160 million also assumes you're at $19 silver and $1,500 gold. Right. And right now we're considerably higher than those levels here. So if you look, even if you did subtract, you know, 13, 14 for G&A, maybe 15 for drilling and whatnot, you'd still be looking at something that could still be a really, really comfortable free cash flow yield, maybe 8, 9, 10, 11%, something like that. So we'll see how those shake out. In terms of what we will use this capital for, you know, if people recall from chatting, we raised about $40 million just to have it on a corporate level, just for defense. I mean, we're in a very strange time, so we wanted to make sure we had unknowns accounted for. We also raised about $35 million to make sure that in 2022, if there was some challenges or stumbles, that we had some money for that, because we're supposed to have $33 million of revenue in 2022. So we assumed that number was zero. And then again, we've talked about having $50 million accounted for a value add tax. So the Mexican government charges us 16% goods and services, and they give it back to you, but we don't know when. So we had to raise that money. So that money is kind of sitting there. And as we start to execute, a whole bunch of that can be released. But in terms of pulling that extra $30 million of debt, a big chunk of that is just because of the way it's structured. If we don't pull it, because again, the lenders need to make a return on their capital, and that's fair. But if we don't pull it, then it just expires. So this is us just, hey, we'll just pull it for safety's sake. So you know, hopefully we've got a lot of other capital above and beyond that. And the ways we'll use that is, you know, we've been doing a bunch of drilling this year, largely infill drilling. And hopefully the ounces and tons that we've delineated, we want to be able to access those. I mean, in the news release, we talked about an exploration drift to get ready to go look at those ounces. You know, we would need to spend some money to go bring those ounces into play, put them into a mine plan, right? So that's a big part of that. We're going to continue drilling pretty aggressively in 2022 and 2023. So we're going to be doing that as well. So a big chunk of that is basically a combination of, we want to grow and move things forward while still having enough cash in our back pocket for operational safety and de-risking. So it might seem like a lot, But again, I think it really changes the type of vehicle we are. Because again, you know, if the market rolls over, the commodity prices look weak, we want to give our investors a lot of confidence that we can weather that storm and still add value to the stock at the same time.
Well, Chris, just touching on the exploration that you guys are working on currently and that you have that extra budget for, you were mentioning before we started recording something I think it'd be great to share with the audience here, and that's just the value per share, the amount of ounces that you have in the ground now and your cost of finding ounces. If you can keep that pattern going and keep adding more value through the drill bit, then there's a lot more value per share that investors are getting. Could you walk us through that again?
Sure. We've talked about this before on the show, that the average company takes about 20 years to go from their first drill hole to cash flow, and then we're going to be about 7. And our point was, well, if we can get this thing up and running and get the money and still have a 1-year payback, then why would we want to drill longer when that drilling comes from dilution? So we wanted to stop the dilution. So for now, we have, you know, approximately 150 million shares outstanding, and we have a certain net asset value per share. So any of the ounces that we might have found in 2021, those ones were not in the feasibility study. So that value that we're going to articulate in the back half of next year in an economic study, that value will get added to the net asset value per share. You know, and the drilling that we're going to do in 2022, if we're successful and find some more ounces and we can put them into a study, we're going to be able to add more value to the net asset value per share. So the really interesting thing is when you look at time, you know, when you think about, you know, the next 1, 2, 3 years, as risk comes down, you know, sentiment might change and come back, we're actually getting cheaper if we're able to keep success with the drill bit going. And again, anyone who's kind of been on the show before is aware that leading into the feasibility study, we were finding ounces in the mine plan for less than $1. So if you can find it for a dollar and you can take it out of the ground for about 7 and your margins are, you know, comfortably in the high teens, that's a really, really good return on invested capital. So we don't need to have a dollar. I mean, if we had anything for less than $5 an ounce while taking it out of the ground for about 12, you're still looking at margins that are extremely healthy that any industry would be proud of. So it's this vehicle where we still get asked if we need money and the risks and whatnot. And what's happening in the background is we're racing ahead trying to add more value. So again, I kind of come back to the actual supply and demand of the stock itself, because it's not so much where we are today. It's where are we at the end of the year? You know, oh, less risk. You know, where are we at the end of 2022? Hopefully we've ramped up successfully and things are looking good, and hopefully the commodity market's a little better, and hopefully we have a few more ounces to show for it too. So this is all about pace in terms of how we can add value and reduce risk. And you know, hopefully there's a bit of a first come, first serve element to how people approach buying and selling the stock.
All right, Chris, before we get you out of here, we do want some of the macro comments on the precious metals, especially on silver, because look, precious metals have rebounded this month. Throughout October, silver's fought its way back to about that 2450 level, gold back to around 1800. What are you seeing in the macro picture?
There's a few fascinating things going on. I did mention the valuation that the sector is trading really cheap. I want to highlight that a little bit more in depth, especially as it relates to the energy trade. So if anyone's paying close attention to the oil and gas stocks, they're on an absolute tear. And if you look at the way that they're valued, they're still trading at over a 40% discount to their long-term averages. My view on this, and take it or leave it, is that ESG model is suggesting that big asset managers don't want to be buying fossil fuels. And that's causing these things to trade extremely cheap. Some of these energy names are trading at, you know, half of their cash flow is like one time their debt. I mean, these companies are going to be debt-free in the next year or two. My view on that is, unfortunately, the ability to transition away from fossil fuels isn't going to happen fast enough relative to the lack of investment in our traditional energy sources to actually give us what we need to keep things going. And it's the same for the metals. You know, we're trading at a discount because people do not want to invest in mining. They think it's dirty. Well, what's happening is less investment. We are seeing decade lows in terms of CapEx going into the mining space, but you need four times as much copper in an electric vehicle as a regular vehicle. You need silver for solar panels, conductivity, cell phones, computers, electronics. So these are necessary metals that are being shunned. So you're getting these opportunities where these industries are trading really cheap. They're really, really healthy. And the supply and demand situation is such that it's only going to be better for metals pricing. So I think that that's one overarching thing where the ESG dynamic has created a bit of a skew. Other than that, to me, the absolute biggest thing out there is that with interest rates being as low as they are, I saw some data points from Bank of America showing that the weighting towards bonds is the lowest it's ever been. You've heard me say this before, that there's been more money going into the equity market this year than the last 25 years combined. So I'm not sure if we're at the extremes yet, but I'd like to think we're pretty close. And what happens if the Fed starts to taper, if interest rates start to go a little higher, you know, who's the marginal buyer for more of those equities, right? And I think that's the big issue. Who, you know, these sectors that are doing really well are trading above long-term averages. And if you do see cost pressure, you do see inflation, well, that tends to hurt margins. And when you do see inflation, multiples tend to come down. That's 100 years of data suggests that when you do see inflation, multiples come down. And again, I think that comes back to margins. So, you know, we look at, for the generalist investor out there, if you've got a whole bunch of stocks that have done extremely well for the last few years, you know, high fives all around, but it's fund flow data like that that makes me sort of poke those people and say, you know, maybe you take 5-10% off the top of a bunch of those high flyers and look at something in the metal space where you have defense, low cost, you're trading below long-term averages, and you're actually buying inflation protection for your portfolio, right? So again, we're you don't need to be a hero in gold and silver, but, you know, there's definitely a good reason why these stocks belong in the portfolio, especially during times where financial uncertainty is high.
All right, Chris, really appreciate the update here. As I mentioned, I will post a link to that news release on the construction update, and please email us with any questions you have for Chris regarding really anything going on at Silvercrest Metals, because there is still a lot ongoing and a lot of value drivers on the horizon. Chris, thanks again for your time, buddy. Hope you have a great rest of your week.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.